Okay, I'm still Richard, and I'm still a grateful and enthusiastic member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Richard!
And we're here to talk about practicing these principles. First, I'd like to ask everybody to indulge me. If you would, I'd just like to share a prayer that means an awful lot to me with you. HP, help us please to set aside everything that we think we know. Helps to set aside everything we think we know about you, and everything we think we know about ourselves, everything we think we know about others, and everything that we think we know about this program for the next hour, so that we can have a new experience in you, so that we can have a new experience in ourselves, so that we can have a new experience in our fellows, and so that we can have a new experience in our own recovery. Thanks for listening. The 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I always have trouble with the even-numbered steps. I don't know what it is. It's like, hit an even-numbered step, and I get stuck. And the 12th is for me, it's kind of the ultimate, you know, because it almost raises more questions than it answers as far as being an instruction for a spiritual task. What principles? You know, what are these principles we're supposed to practice, and how am I supposed to practice them? And you know, that's the confusion I hit when I hit the 12th step. Just to maybe get everybody's brains going, I got something from our book, As We Understood, that I'd like to share with you. For many of us, the true value of the program becomes obvious as we discover that we are able to practice these principles not only with our family members, but with our employers and coworkers, neighbors, and even casual acquaintances. We are able to make plans, work toward goals, and live our lives purposefully. Before Al-Anon, many of us were so caught up in our fears and negative emotions that we wasted several years that we can never regain. Now we are able to live without regrets, in a way that becomes rewarding and self-reinforcing. We are able to do what we have to do to act in a responsible way. Once we begin living in the 10th, 11th, and 12th steps on a daily basis, we are able to live lives of sane and happy usefulness. We have no desire to return to the past with its pain, anger, and frustration. We learn to make choices which will lead us to satisfaction and fulfillment. That's one of the first things that was news to me when I got here, was that there were principles that I could take outside of these rooms and practice them in my workplace and practice them in my family, practice them in my home. But I was still stuck with that question, what principles? So where do we look in Al-Anon to find the principles that they're talking about in the 12th step? Ian, any ideas? Okay. Yeah, well, the show's over there. Where do we look? Where do we look to find the principles in that we're talking about in the 12th step? What principles? Where do we look? Yeah. That's why I picked on you. Okay, we find them in the steps and the traditions, is what I'm hearing Ian say. Okay, so what kind of principles do we find in the steps? Anybody? Acceptance. Okay, where do you find that? The first step. What's another example of the steps? The principles that we find in the steps. Honesty in which step? Four steps. Yeah. Four and five. Honesty. Yeah. Okay? I'm not saying you got right answers. That's not what I'm trying to accomplish here. I'm saying, hey, great. Let's any other ideas?
Confession.
Okay. You're getting that out of the fifth step? Okay. Any other? Trust? Where do you find trust? Five, yeah. Ten, okay. Ten for honesty. Humility. What step do we pull that out of? Six and seven. Okay. What about the traditions? What principles do we find there? Okay, self-supporting. Self-supporting. I presume you're talking about 70. Yeah? Autonomy, Ricky Jean, I'm hearing four, is that correct? Okay. Unity. Okay. What else do we get out of the traditions? Ooh. Which we, as shorthand, we refer to that as anonymity, right? Sorry? Mm-hmm. Okay. Principles about personality. Okay. We'll And we talked about humility in the steps, but isn't traditional 11 all about humility, right? What else? Okay. How about responsibility? Spirituality. I mean, some of these come together as combinations of different steps and traditions. Yeah, there's steps combined with traditions. Okay, so those are some of the places that we look in order to find the. When we get here and we're new. Isn't it true that a lot of times the steps and the traditions are just they're just a little too heavy, a little too complicated, a little too over our heads? Right. So another place that we look for those is the slogans. An example. A lot of you know that I'm a big fan of this book, Alatine, A Day at a Time. I'm a great believer that part of our problem is that we have a tendency to complicate things. And the people who contributed to this book really have a handle on the whole keep it simple idea. So when I'm really stuck on something, the best place for me to go is the Alatine literature, because then I'm reading stuff by somebody who I can understand. From page 286 of Alatine, A Day at a Time, when trouble comes my way, it's easy to let my old feelings of fear and worry get hold of me. I let myself get tired and worn out. I can't even think straight. That's when I need to remember, let go and let God. If I've done all I can in a situation, I can leave the results up to God and trust Him to carry me through the day. He did it yesterday and the day before, so why not today? Things may not turn out my way, but it's good to know that they'll turn out the way they're supposed to. When I've done my best to solve a problem and things aren't getting any better, I know it's time to say, hey God, this one is up to you. I do the groundwork, he'll take care of the end result. What's the principle that they're talking about there? Faith. These are all interconnected principles. Trust, letting go, faith. Sorry, what was the one I missed? Just missed. Surrender. Everything. How do you do that? See, that's the other problem that I run into. Is once I get introduced to this idea of, okay, you can look in the steps, you can look in the traditions, you can look in the slogans and find these principles. Now, how do I do that? We take a principle like faith, the let go and let God idea. How do you do that? Anybody got an experience with... Okay, pick up the phone and reach out. That idea that my higher power speaks to me through other people. So part of let go and let God is to give him a chance to operate, give him somebody to operate through. What else? Okay. Okay. Acting as if. And how do you do that? You know, in the third step, we make that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a loving higher power. And speaking for myself, to this day, I don't know how to do that for the rest of my life. To this day, I'm not even sure in a given situation exactly how to go about doing that. But what Karen just described, that idea of looking at the situation, saying, okay. For the sake of argument, there's this loving higher power that loves me, adores me, wants the best for me in the long run. What would they want me to do in this situation? You know, if I can step aside from what I think I want in that situation and do what I think a loving higher power would like to see me do, that to me is submitting my will to that of my higher power. The best of my ability. What's an example of practicing humility in all of our affairs? The kind of humility that we're talking about in step 6 and 7 or in the 11th tradition.
Take care of my part. You know, it's like I remember when one of my siblings got sober and said they had in a group that they had done step 9, and my first thought was, no, you didn't. Excuse me? I heard nothing. But I think step 9, I would say, you know, just being willing to have a power other than myself.
Another one is to me with that's I hadn't thought of the ninth step in that context, but boy, I mean, doesn't it take humility for me to go to somebody that I've harmed and admit that? Another one that occurs to me is just in my normal interactions. Karen and I talk about it sometimes that I need to watch. My favorite sport of Richard watching, right? Looking over my own shoulder and having that counter in my head. How many times did you say it? Right? Because for me, I can really only allow myself to say things twice. Okay, I say something to you once, ask you to do something, or try to convey my ideas to you. Say it once, I'm communicating. If I say it twice, maybe I'm making allowances for my poor communication skills or your bad hearing. But if I say it three times, then I'm nagging, I'm controlling, or I'm manipulating. And that's got to be based on the premise that I'm right and you're wrong. Well, you know, where's the humility in that? So the part of practicing the humility in the 11th tradition for me is practicing the 10th step, watching me go through that exercise and keeping count. What's another example of the humility that we try to achieve? And again, based on that idea of letting go of the idea that I'm right and you're wrong and you need to be fixed, and you know, for our own good, you need to be corrected, which is kind of where I live. What about responsibility? What are some of the things that we can do, the changes that we make in our lives to take responsibility? Quit blaming, okay. And aren't we good at that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when I got here, I was just I really, really disliked all those little sob stories that you guys told. You know, like whining about them and what they wouldn't listen and the things that they did to you. And it's like you guys didn't get it. Like, I had real problems, right? And you were wasting time in those meetings whining about what you thought were your problems. And it took me a little while to figure out that idea that victims don't recover. And that for me to get any better, I needed to take responsibility for my own recovery and stop blaming. Letting other people take responsibility for their stuff. The flip side of that responsibility, and also think about it, the autonomy that we talked about with the fourth tradition. Okay, okay. Am I hearing stop rescuing?
Yeah. Well, that's part of it.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that we talk about sometimes is you know, what's the fundamental principle in the 12th traditional? For me, it comes down to the question, what's the loving thing to do? And sometimes the loving thing to do is not the popular thing to do. It's not the thing that's going to get me the accolades or the approval, because somebody is going to have to learn a life lesson, or I'm going to have to leave somebody to the consequences of their choices. And you know, sometimes people don't like it when you do that.
When I think of responsibility.
Okay. Okay, and what can we do to when we hit a situation to encourage ourselves to think that through and to respond instead of react? Blair? Sarah? prayer and meditation. Run, yeah, even just running the situation and my proposed response through the filter of someone else's perspective.
How many times did your sponsor say nothing? You're like, oh, not the answer I wanted. Do nothing.
Yeah. Don't just do something. Sit there. And
even just slowing down and taking that time, and I guess that's making a connection with your higher power between the stimulus and the response, can allow me to do that run through, or to just second things rather than be stuck into my old way of reacting to things, mm-hmm. having that ability, or taking a bit of time between the stimulus and the response to let go of me forcing the situation and maybe let the higher power work through me.
Exactly. The idea of having that person in our life who comes along with the dangerous statement or the dangerous question, and being able to say to them, you've given me something to think about. I can't give you a response right now. I need to sit with that for a little while, and I'll get back to you tonight. I'll get back to you tomorrow morning. I'll get back to you in 2 days. But just having the time to practice the slogan think, and to phone the sponsor, and to 1-2-3 it, and all that kind of stuff.
What I've come to understand is just, the response is based on emotion. And for me, just even allowing myself to say, it's okay if I just feel it right now. Because my response is, I want to get rid of it. Like, I got this thing cooking, and it's got to go. So I either got to react, or I got to respond, I got to do something with it. Rather than just saying, no, I can just sit there for a little bit, and I can soak in it. For a change, mm-hmm. And given a period of time passes, and it kind of passes too sometimes, or do something different, go for a walk, do something and blow it off, and try to understand it.
If I have a feeling, do I need to do something about it?
No.
Why is that so hard?
Because you need to know how I have power. I'm having a rough time, hard enough time. Giving my life really to my higher power, much less, inflicting myself on you. The higher power key, whether I use it as God, or whether I use it as a sponsor, whether I use it as a group, beginning to have that trust to let my higher power make the decision instead of the Almighty here. So, yeah.
I just want to follow that thread a little bit more. Okay. But that idea of what we were talking about a minute ago with don't just do something, sit there. Why is that so hard for us? When we're having a feeling, why is it so hard to just feel the feeling? We have to fix it. Why? Oh, okay. We somehow confuse feelings with facts. Mm-hmm. So maybe one of the things that I need to work toward in learning to practice these principles is to accept that feelings aren't facts. Yeah, I know, speaking for me, I don't handle uncomfortable feelings well. I have this sense somewhere, this conviction deep down inside me, that if I'm feeling uncomfortable, I need to do something about it now. And one of the things you guys have taught me is that ain't true. That I can feel uncomfortable and things will still turn out all right. Who knew? Yeah.
Okay. Emotions are spiritual things. Mm-hmm. why the alcoholic uses alcohol. That's why the drugger uses drugs. That's why the sex addict uses sex. To escape the emotion, whatever it may be and wherever it comes from. You gotta have something to get away from that feeling. Mm-hmm. That's why the codependent, the overeater, you gotta do something to escape this emotion that I don't know what to do with, because there it is. What do I do? And you go somewhere, all of us do something.
To a great extent, don't a lot of us end up in Al-Anon because what we medicate with is someone else? So what about honesty? How do I learn to practice honesty in all my affairs? Ian's going, well, you will someday, Richard.
I think the biggest thing I've ever learned in Al-Anon, the most important thing for me, was check my motive. Especially if I feel like I have to do something, or have to respond, or something needs my attention, I gotta stop and say, well, why is that? I mean, my motive can be extremely, extremely wrong, and I have to take the time to take a look at those motives. Like, why am I doing this? Yeah. And usually the motive is because I'm unsettled by this something. Like my wife is something, you know, there's fear there, or something unsettling. So, yeah.
Somewhere here, do we have a tool that talks about checking my motives? Yeah, it sounds to me like the 10 steps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As a means of, again, learning to practice these principles. How do we learn honesty? Okay, I'm going to check my motives. But I find my motives are bad, and I still am dishonest. How do I change that? And when we were wrong, promptly, freaking admitted it. Yeah. And the idea of in the sixth and seventh step, becoming entirely ready to have this dishonesty removed from me, and asking my higher power for help with that.
My defects of character weren't defects to me, they were my tools.
Mm-hmm.
They were my tools of survival. I had to learn to give those tools up to them. For some bizarre reason, I thought they were. But they didn't. And I had to learn to give those tools up and learn to use them.
Yeah. So, like that idea that the seventh step, I mean, it's not necessarily a blinding flash of light, poof. You're perfect, Richard. All defects of character are gone. Go forth and inspire people. Hasn't happened yet. I'm saying it hasn't happened.
How do you change that honesty, though? Like, because I used to have a problem with this, you know, just because I'm honest doesn't mean that everyone else wants to hear that I'm honest. Wants to hear that I'm honest.
Well, it depends on what kind of honesty we're talking about. But I mean, in my case, I'm talking about the kind of self-centered, fear-driven dishonesty that hides my mistakes from you and curries your approval with some of the most bizarre things that I can come up with. And the point for me being that I didn't, in the seventh step, suddenly become an honest man. Instead, what I get is opportunities to act in more honest ways. And the result of that over time is that I'm more honest, not necessarily an honest guy. But I'm not the guy that I was.
Rather than this is my inventory.
Okay, and you know that again comes back, and sometimes these principles we got to sort out. Like, okay, honesty is important, loving is important. What's the loving thing to do, or the principle that I see in the eighth tradition of unconditional love? Is it the loving thing to do to tell this person the truth right at this moment? You know, and I mean how. Yeah. Oh, come on. The tape didn't catch that. Yeah. But, geez, where was I going there?
Behavior is unacceptable, and okay, this is where I draw the line. You know, being knowledgeable about ourselves rather than just blurting out everything that comes to mind. To me, that's not really honesty. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, who here has been guilty of the hurtful truth? You know, a lady who's very important to me had a sticker on her fridge that said. Honesty without love is brutality. Love without the honesty is people pleasing. And that first half of that was the first time I read that was kind of a wow moment for me. It's like, holy crap. You know, sometimes there's no excuse for telling the truth. Because it's just plain unnecessary. So then, you know, then we get in a situation where we're sorting through these principles, and some of them supersede others. How do you sort that out? Any ideas? Call your sponsor. Good plan. That you're checking with my higher power, and okay, is this the right course of action? Pros, cons, but most importantly, what would a loving higher power have me do? For me, that always seems to come down to, in the final analysis, you know, talk about the 12th tradition. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions. Suggests to me that I take me out of the equation, that I'm looking for what's the loving thing to do. I mentioned before about, you know, the Alateen literature does a nice job of keeping it simple. One of the co-founders of the Other Fellowship, Dr. Bob, in the last major talk that he gave before he died, he talked about, you know, let's not complicate this thing. Because in the end, it all comes down to love and service. What's the loving thing to do, and how can I serve the people around me? Where I think what he was proposing as the superseding principles that we need to be applying if we're trying to live this program. I'd be real interested in your thoughts on that.
Moving forward in a way that breathing out loud.
And what I'm hearing there is again that the solution to that is one of those principles that we talked about, or a couple of those principles: surrender, trust.
Mm-hmm.
Say do the footwork and then turn over the outcome. In order to turn over that outcome, one more time, I got a couple of principles there that need to show up.
I think also it's just mind-boggling. The latter part there, we're talking about practice, these principles. You know, and the word practice is just that. You know, you go to a doctor, and that's, you're going to a general practitioner. It's just practice. You know, oh, great. How many years have you been in business? So I just started. Oh, well, practice on me. but, you know, that's what it is. I remember going to a doctor with a broken thumb, and he literally took out this big book. It had to be about this thick, and he was Korean.
A big book.
He's going, broken thumb, and broken thumb, and he's looking at my finger and looking at the book, and goes, that hurt, oh, it broken, you know. But he was a general practitioner, you know, and it's practice gives me serenity to the point I'm appreciating it more, that it's just that. It takes time. I have to practice it over and over, and I'm running up and down the steps going, oh, there's one. And I need to practice that. Oh, no, it's that one. I need to practice that. I'm not sitting here saying I got to figure it out, but it gives me great serenity to know that I have a guideline. Here they are. It's all steps. Practice. And practice makes perfect. Eventually.
Yeah. Well,
it's not called general perfectionist.
No.
Well, and yeah, and I don't know, is it significant that the 12th step does not read and live these principles in all our affairs? You know?
Well, no, but I think it's significant. I'm comfortable with the I do think it's significant that the steps are numbered.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't remember who said it, but somebody once said, you know, it wasn't that Bill Wilson came up with these fabulous steps, because they've been around for centuries, millennia. What he did was he numbered them.
Yeah.
You know, I remember coming into Al-Anon and going, 1, 2, 3, and oh, God, I'm ready for 12, you know, and I'm now inflicting my principles on people who don't want to hear it. So, you know, sort of like laying up A, it'll just go over the house. But yeah, there's a reason why.
Yeah, the Al-Anon waltz, 1, 2, 12, 1, 2, 12, 1, 2, 12.
You know, and it wasn't 2, 12. Yeah. You skip over that. But, I mean, there's a reason why you go through, you know, the fourth and sixth step, and you know, sixth step. There's a reason why you sort of systematically do that, because how are you going to make amends and be as through step 9 or go to 10 if you don't know what the hell the problem is in 4 and 5? And so, I mean, you have to have, I mean, you shouldn't say that you can't dabble. I don't know what to say. I'm trying to think. You know, it's not that rigid, but you don't understand. There's a reason why you work the steps in order, because my God, if you haven't done 1, 2, 3, what the hell are you doing at 12? Because then you're just, you know, regurgitating, you know, stick all over everybody. But
it's so visual.
I have to be practicing humility. I can't do 12 unless I'm practicing humility.
Well, and you're right, if you haven't done the other steps, what principles do you have to give away?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Woo. Yeah. We always call it the bliss minute, you know. Comes in new and does the first three, and then everybody in their lives gets counted. You should go to Al-Anon. I don't have any alcoholics. I don't care. You should go to Al-Anon.
You're the one that don't get it. I've been to meetings. I go to AA meetings. I go to NA meetings. And I specifically look, and somebody's struggling, and they're going on, and they're wailing and wailing, and I'll put the guy aside and ask him, have you ever worked the 12 steps? And he's been coming back for years. So, no. Thank you. So I need to know. Because that's what it looks like, right? It's still there. You've never changed because you've never worked this far. And I apply that to my own life. Where am I? Well, because I've only worked this far. Like you said, you've got to work this far. It's so important. It's very, very crucial.
And so what's the principle that's required there? Commitment. Yeah, the focus that we talk about in the fifth and sixth traditions, for example, the idea of a primary purpose, spiritual aim, and willingness. That's the one I had in my head that I was going to throw out in a minute.
So even growth, I mean, like each of the, you know, the steps talk about, you know, became willing, or those sorts of things. It's a process. movement forward. If you're following that, then you're making progress, whether it's level of whatever help that might be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how hard it is to do hot stuff? If you just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2.
It's really hard.
Yeah. Well, this talking about this. Talking about this jumping around the steps, the one that's been coming to me is that new definition for the 13th step, which is combining steps 1 and 12. My life is unmanageable. Let me share it with you. Sorry, that has absolutely nothing to do with what we're supposed to be talking about, but it felt like it had to come out. One that we haven't talked about that is a big one for us is autonomy. Okay. I think I got here to a great extent because I didn't understand the principle of autonomy, the fact that my life is my life and my decisions about my life are mine to make unless and until they affect you. More importantly, your life is your life. You're free to make those decisions up until they affect me. I didn't get that. And anybody else here have a problem with that before they got here? That's just laughing at me isn't helpful. That's yeah, okay, we just heard Kitty talk about that for an hour. Ian. Well, if we understand this principle of autonomy, we get to the point where we've had that boot to the side of the head that suddenly says, "Oh man, I've been doing this wrong." And this tradition says, "I've got a right to live my life; they've got a right to live theirs." And yet, I've got these habits and these patterns and tools that I bring to the party that get in the way of doing that. So, what are some of the things that we do? That we learn to do in order to take our hands off and to keep them from putting their hands on us. Ideas? Okay. 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 Divorce as a spiritual tool. I can buy into that.
Okay. Sounds like a separate workshop on its own. Maybe.
Yeah. Practicing the second tradition, and doing the family conscience, for example. One of the tools, best tools for me, was one I've heard about a few times, is pick up the phone and call my sponsor. Because this may look to me like it's affecting me. Your decision to do X is affecting me. And it's really bugging me. And I pick up the phone, and my sponsor will say, "Okay, I'm not quite sure I understand how that affects you." And when I find that I can't explain it, then I have to rethink things. Anything else on that?
And informed group conscience. And having had the privilege to serve the World Service level, that was the one thing I learned was to trust the process when I was at the conference. And it is such, tell people the facts, give them the information they need to make a decision, ask them to carefully consider the decision, and then, allow them to, come together to vote or however you want to call it. And then realizing that God speaking to the group. It's an incredible process. And very, very, we won't do it too often, but, it would be nice. But I'm
just... They're going to hear Karen laughing, and they know she laughs at me. So any closing thoughts here since we just heard the triangle. Any closing thoughts on applying these principles? How to find them? How to apply them?
Rugged individualism is clear stuff over your bootstraps. You know, it's the Donald Trump theory. You know, it's that, you know, by God, it's run over everybody, and you know, whoever dies the most toys wins. I mean, it's not, it goes against a lot of what our upbringing is out there in the world.
And this is a little touchy-feely for...
Well, I don't know if it's touchy-feely, but it's just, it takes into account other people's feelings, other people's freedom to fail or not. It's really, really hard thing to practice because, you know, I remember one time saying to a boss I've ever heard of, he used to go, you don't have to do this, you might be right. And I said, you boss, no, you might be right. He goes, goddamn straight I am.
Well, that didn't work.
After I left, I was just like humbled, and I was just like, okay, next meeting, I'm shutting up for sure, you know, and going to meetings and hearing stuff, and I never thought of that either, and I've been around for a while, and, you know, and that's how, you know, honest and open and willing, to be ready to hear the next thing that anything.
And, you know, and for me, that was the point of the prayer that we started off with here tonight, is, and that's a prayer that's become really important to me, because, you know, mine is the disease of I think I know stuff, right? You know, the idea that it's a disease of perception, and I firmly believe things that will cause me to make life-changing decisions, and later I'll find out that they weren't true. And one of the most important things for me to be able to do in order to practice these principles is to be able to set aside my preconceptions and my prejudices and my default behaviors. And with that, I think we're out of time. Thank you, everybody, for participating. Mm-hmm.